And we're live!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 73 of Fans of Holla. I am Joe Amato, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Tyler T-Rex Baker. What's up, T-Rex?
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Well, like I said, we got a lot of different topics today. I mean, there's really nothing new going on, I think, in the the world of Masters, anything new. There's been some goofy commercial. I don't know if it was out of the UK or where. Something about some money maker. I mean, Dirt might even know what it was, but it had Skeletor in it. It was, what was that song? I think Fame. He's dancing to Fame, and He-Man's getting bananas at the end of the... I don't know. It was weird. Did you see this thing or no?
I saw the post. I hadn't watched it yet. I assumed it was something kind of along the lines of like this Matthew Lesko, you know, you can get money from the government for free and you know, buy this and get that. And I mean, it was fun of it years ago, back in the like early 2000s, like, you know, one of those get rich quick schemes of the government. I don't know. I hadn't watched it yet. So
yeah, I'll be honest. I really didn't know what it was about. I mean, it was kind of cool just seeing. I mean, I can imagine if we would have seen that here on TV in the United States, anything with He-Man or Skeletor or something, still kind of cool. So it was cool. I was like, I just didn't really know what it was. So that's the only kind of new thing that popped up.
As long as they're not making fun of He-Man, you know, or doing something that's not funny or that's, you know, obnoxious and using He-Man doing so, then, you know, the more publicity, the better. As long as it's not doing anything that just makes you want to, you know, smack the hell out of the ad wizard who put it together.
No, they actually had some cool special effects for the commercial, too. So, yeah, it wasn't bad. But, well, topics today. We have three different topics. I didn't know how you wanted to start off. I didn't know if you wanted to start off because we have a character spotlight. We have an episode of a cartoon. And then we have a hypothetical battle situation. What'd you want to start off with?
I guess, before I forget here, I made a mental note of this. Our buddy Daniel Carhunin, I told him last week's episode that I would correctly mention his name for the very nice write-up he did for us a few weeks ago on Facebook. I goofed last week and forgot to mention his name. So, Daniel, I got your last name correct. I'm pretty certain that I did. So I apologize for missing last week's, but completely has slipped my mind. I'm not going to pretend like there was some other excuse, like my dog ate my homework. That's why I forgot, or I needed fresh pants and didn't have any or something. Mm-hmm. Whatever the case may be, I simply forgot. I apologize. But there's the shout out that I told you I would give to you there, bud.
There, you got his proper shout out. So, how'd you want to start it? I'll let you choose.
You want to do New Adventures episode first before we dig into the other discussions?
Let's go right into it. Start it off with this episode, which it was a pretty good. It was a good episode. But go ahead.
Yeah, it's we decided to review the episode the Galactic Guardians. And I'm proud to say it's called Galactic Guardians and not Galactic Protectors due to copyright issues and any of that BS.
Right.
So at least, you know, you get to watch an episode with the designated title of these group of heroic warriors. But it's pretty much it's a backstory as to how the much larger group of Galactic Guardians kind of came together. And they're on a boys' night out in the forest, just kind of hanging out and reminiscing about how they came together over a common threat, and they're just are essentially, you know, reminiscing about how they all came together. And turns out there was I forgot the name of the ship, but it's a ship ran by all artificial intelligences carrying chemicals. Different chemical warfare that was used in the chemical wars, and they find out that it's off course, and the ship that's carrying nothing but chemicals off course clearly is a threat to, well, pretty much everybody. So they realize that the robots that are arming the entire ship are a bit too much for a small group of warriors to infiltrate and successfully get it back on course and risk, you know, you know, with possible lives being at stake. So Sagittar recruits three new warriors. And it's what's cool about this is getting to see a lot. One of the things that we only got to see on occasion with the Filmation shows was to see other of He-Man's allies joining in one episode altogether. And one of the perks about New Adventures that you would see a lot of the villains or a lot of the heroes or both all in one episode, something that you know, it wasn't just always Hydron and Flipshot and He-Man and Flog, Slushhead, and Skeletor. You had a mixed bag of the illustrious groups that represented each side. And fortunately, you get that fair treatment in this episode. So We're introduced to Artilla, Tuscador, and Spinwit, three of my personal favorites. Well, who am I kidding? I like all the Galactic Guardians. There's not one that I don't like. But we're introduced to them as the new recruits for the Galactic Guardians and showcasing what they can do as to why they're sufficient recruits.
Right.
And so, of course, they all work out. You see what Artilla can do, what Tuscador can do, and what Spinwit can do. And they go on the mission, and they run into a light cocoon, which is a sequence that just kind of seems odd and, you know, heavily science-based, and it gives the ridiculous scientists something to do, and you just want to strangle the voice actors who were doing the scientists, or if it's just one guy, I would like to strangle him, you know.
But, did the scientists even do anything, though, when that thing was crushing?
They're just there for exposition, is to try to explain. At least you have Skeletor at one point just saying, blah, 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 you know, essentially. Just like, shut up, let's get to the action here, essentially, so... But and Skeletor finds out about this ship, which and convinces Flog that, look, we need to go attack the ship and blow it up while they're on it. So everybody, you know, that way we take care of the ship and we take care of He-Man and the Galactic Guardians all in one big swoop. So you've got two forces coming at this ship carrying lots of chemical warfare, armed with robots all over the ship, and of course, the warriors make it onto the ship, followed by the evil mutants, and you got a big battle between all the robots on the ship and trying to avoid, you know, Skeletor and the mutants coming onto the ship. And throughout the episode, you're getting to see what Spinwit can do, who really shines in this episode, I think. I mean, it's not like they're given tons and tons of stuff to do, but of all the sequences, I think Spinwit's given some of the coolest sequences to showcase what he can do. And you know, Artilla and Tuscador, you know, is given some as well. We get Sagittar in this episode.
Yeah.
You know, so he's used quite a bit. And, I mean, it's a, you know, aside from the scientists, it's a fun episode and getting to see characters that, you know, lots of the toys are represented in this one episode. And that's one of the great things about cartoons is when you see characters that you have on your shelf or in your toy collection, hey, that's cool, you know. Nocturna's in this episode, or Kao's in this one, Lizor's in this episode. So it's chock full of a lot of the characters from the toy line, which is always A+ in my book.
Yeah, and that's what was good about this, because this episode, like you said, how it started off, they're all just relaxing around a campfire. It looked like they were having steaks or something. It looked like steaks to me, like they're hearing girl.
It's, you know, New Adventures is not the most perfect cartoon. I would be a fool and completely blind and oblivious to, as a fan, to not admit such things where, you know, they're drinking, you know, what appears to be cups of coffee. I'm like, I don't really, I have to kind of blame, you know, some things in a lot of the cartoons were a little too close to, you know, modern world cultures where you don't kind of expect to see people eating steaks and drinking cups of coffee and, you know, yeah, referencing to be sure and brush your teeth on these kinds of, you know, shows and stuff like that. But, you know, it's science fiction. Anything goes in science fiction. So you just, I guess it's kind of one of those things where you're just like, you know, if you can believe, you know, what we're seeing here aside from that, then why not believe they're drinking cups of coffee and having steak?
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the thing. You know, like, it's like acceptable in every cartoon, it seems like. If you ever see them, like, eating on a piece of chicken or what looks like a chicken leg, you know, already cooked up.
And see, that's passable. We've seen it several times. Beastman, Prince Adam King are eating, you know, a big chicken leg. It could be whatever, you know, a ham, grapes, vegetables, right, whatever. We find that to be...
But looks so specific. A steak does.
When you draw specific steaks, or they're clearly drinking out of a little cup of coffee or a cup that looks like it has some sort of hot beverage in it, I feel like, I feel like that cup design. I mean, it's like, I mean, of course, this is the fanboy mentality where you're looking at things and like thinking, "What the hell are you doing? It's a He-Man cartoon for crying out loud!" You know, we're discussing what the hell are we doing bitching about. You know, but when I went back and rewatched it too, it's just kind of one of those things where it was like, and drink cups of coffee. It's almost kind of you waiting for it to be like an ad for Nescafe or something like that, you know?
Yeah, it looked different. And they're having some fish, but they're relaxing. And
fish I can buy. Fish is another thing that I could believe that, you know, in the, you know, world of Eternia as well as in the world of Primus that, you know, they can catch fish.
Sure. So they're sitting, they're relaxing. You see Sagittar, which I'm glad you said that too, because I hated that they started calling him Sagittar at points. It's like, oh, come on, Sagittarius, Sagittar. That's what I'm calling him, Sagittar. He was called that before in one of the episodes. That's how I'm always going to refer to him at. But he's sitting there with his helmet off, which looked kind of weird. It was weird seeing his bald head, and just it was different seeing him with his helmet off and everything.
Well, yeah, it was. Well, I feel like Sagittar looked more imposing with his helmet off than, you know, Spinwit and Tuscador, where they look just like, you know,
regular
guys. There's nothing really like the Tuscador figure looks a lot more imposing. Like, you, and of course, the Classics version has a very beefy looking kind of broad guy inside the outfit.
Yeah, he looks like a tough guy. I mean, you're right, though. Sagittar looks tough with that helmet off. He looks like a tough guy. But he was sitting there saying, when they were sitting there all around the campfire, I think he said, like, they were doing something, he said, that humans referred to as relaxing. I couldn't remember if the robot said it first. The little robot guy said something about relaxing. And Sagittar said something like, yeah, that's what humans do, right? And I forgot how he said it, but I was like,
yeah. Yeah, or Tila tells him that, you know, he just needs to relax, and Sagittar kind of can't understand the concept of relax, which I just think that was just a lame attempt at a joke.
Well, you heard how they all, like, laugh. Now, that's what I was going to ask you, because he said what humans refer to as, you know, relaxing, or that's what humans do. So did you take it as he was speaking of humans that were from Earth and not, you know, like He-Man there, Flipshot, Hydron?
No, humans in general, because clearly, you know, Spinwit, you know, Tuscador, He-Man, Flipshot, Hydron, they're all humans.
Okay, I was just wondering. I didn't
necessarily a, which I wouldn't even know what you call Sagittar. He's not a centaur or something like that. He's just clearly
a form of it.
An alien.
Yeah, he's like a,
you know, a humanoid, you know, so to speak.
Yeah, I look at him as like a humanoid centaur, meaning it's, you know, not an actual horse, but his whole body can appear to look horse-like. That's why his name, Sagittar, from, you know, Sagittarius. At least that's how I always took it.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, they're all sitting there reminiscing about how, like you said, they all met and first were training everybody. And I like seeing when Tuscador was battling with Sagittar, because it's like Tuscador seemed like he was getting the best of him when they were doing their little training fight. Remember, and he's using his tusks to flip them and everything, which was cool. Then when it came to like spin with, they said like, this guy's so quick, like, you know, like when he gets going and you'd see he would like move his arm and that would like flap or whatever so quick that he was like deflecting these balls they were shooting at him or whatever. And I thought they even said something like, oh, I wonder how he could do with lasers. I thought they said that, but
yeah, then he deflect lasers at that kind of speed.
Yeah, that, okay. And then you see his body moving, which is kind of like Cyclone. And then when it came to our Artilla, or did I just say that? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Artilla, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, God, I felt like I screwed his name up. But yeah, Artilla, when he was getting ready to do his stuff, he was in front of some, like, kind of big piece of metal. It must have been something really strong. And they said, like, wow, I feel bad for him, like, what he's, you know, up against. And then he, like, his hands disappeared, and it reappeared, these, like, lasers or these guns. Like, it seems like it can transform, you know, the hands into weapons. And he just blew that away, you know, blew that wall away. He's like, oh, I guess I feel sorry for the wall. Like, hey, we were thinking about the wrong person, you know, because they thought that he wouldn't be able to take out this wall. So you've seen all the highlights of all their abilities. And then we do get him on the ship. And like you said, the scientists are on there too. But I felt like the scientists, to me, didn't do much except for one part trying to be a distraction for when, remember, they said they had one of the dorks try to get onto the camera to talk to Skeletor to say, you can't do this. Like, he was putting on an act for Skeletor. And that's when Skeletor was like, oh, I've heard this one before, as the guy is talking, trying to say why you should.
He was really trying to, you know, it's just one of the, I'm like, I can't believe my brain didn't tune out. Because when they do show up on screen, my brain kind of floats away like Homer Simpson does when he's not listening to somebody. I forgot which episode it was, but you see his brain kind of float away from his head. That's kind of right. What happens when the scientists appear in these episodes. And,
right.
He is really trying to warn Skeletor, you know, if you destroy the ship, you're close enough to us that you will be blown up as well. So he's you know, not just, you know, fooling around and just feeding him a story. He's, like, telling him the truth. Of course, Skeletor's not – Flog is hesitant, but yeah. Skeletor, you know, pursues, and he's like, no, let's – well, I will say this. They do change their mind and instead board the ship.
Yeah, they do.
As opposed to just firing on it, which gives us, you know, the mutant troopers coming on board looking like, you know, hordes of stormtroopers or you know, invading the ship like in New Hope or something like that.
Yeah, because everybody was there. Like, I mean, like you said, I think Critter was there. And I think Lizor, I think he was
Lizor
there.
Lizor was there. Slushhead. I mean, they don't get to do a whole lot, but it's just cool. Optic is there. Yeah. So it's a big checklist episode. A lot of characters get mentioned or used briefly.
Yeah, used or shown or something. But, you know, I mean, which it was cool to see all of them. It was really nice, especially felt like you said, you know, the heroes finally got their time to shine, at least be shown a lot. But what didn't happen in that episode was, you know, I was expecting, oh, my God, here comes a big epic battle between good and evil. And, oh, you didn't get it, you know, because they got sucked out through this thing. But, well, that was another thing. You know, I'm sure maybe it changes throughout the season as it goes on more and more, because you would know. But from what I've gotten out of this so far, at least when it comes to He-Man, is I feel like it's more about his sword and his powers than He-Man. Meaning, no, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying He-Man is not going to show feats of strength in New Adventures, which I'm sure he will as it goes further. But unlike Filmation and stuff, where it seemed like they always highlighted him, you know, lifting up something super heavy, or always showing his strength, and yes, he would use his sword. This seems like it's always more about his sword, doing some power, shooting a beam, and even something cool in this, you see. When they were talking about, like you said, it was going to crush them, like, you know, this cocoon or whatever was going to keep crushing the ship or something, they figured they had to blast something outside, but they couldn't get out through it. And so He-Man does something with his sword. It's like an ability that even, like, seemed like worked with his body. He phased, which I like using the reference of the Flash, like how he can phase through stuff. He phased through the ship and with the sword and was able to use it to destroy that outer shell.
That seemed kind of lazy. I just thought, like, what, you know, we want to see He-Man, you know, doing the impossible. And I felt like having He-Man, you know, climb outside aboard the ship and hold on to it and avoid floating away and holding the power sword out and absorbing the light cocoon, because that's what it was attracted to, was heavy power sources.
Yeah, it sucked it. Yeah,
I just thought, like, him phase, like, ah, come on, this is kind of getting in that realm where, you know, She-Ra's power sword would just turn into, you know, sword to remote control and, you know, sword to, you know, a lug wrench, yeah. You know, sword to crowbar, you know, it just.
But did you see like
those things where, like, you know. It's you can buy certain things that are out of the ordinary to a certain extent, but when you got the sword causing the body to phase through metal like that, I felt like I think you're asking us to buy a bit too much. That's probably, you know, of the stuff that's going on in the story. That's one of those things where I'm like, I would rather see He-Man actually go outside in outer space and risk dying and trying to absorb all this, as opposed to, oh, look, check out this stuff. Look what I can do, you know.
Yeah, because that's what I meant. I feel like they're just always highlighting that. At least that's what I was getting at. That sword is always
the sword definitely is more emphasized than, you know, I mean, He-Man is, you know, doing a lot of sword battles and stuff like that, slicing through robots, as you see in this episode, too. You know, strength is used, but the sword is definitely emphasized a great deal. And that's, I assume that's probably something that Jack Olesker either chose to do or may have been even instructed to do, you know, that maybe help sell the power sword toys. I mean, it's could be, and it simply just could be, this is just what we chose to do in this episode and nothing more. Yeah. It's could be a lot of reasons because, you know, I mean, even though there is continuity throughout this series, there are some things that, you know, like with a lot of cartoons, work in this episode, but may not work in another episode.
Yeah, because I try to, like I said, I just try to find all the connections and see basically what kind of powers or how they're portraying He-Man in, you know, like a series or episode, whatever. But, so we've seen that, but at one point towards the end, once the, you know, like you said, that the cocoon is taken down by the sword, I think, I can't remember if it was Flipshot Hydron, which one was on Starship Eternia? Which one shot the blast into that thing they were in to open a hole? Which one? Remember, one of them, didn't they have to bust them out of there? And I think it was...
Well, Artilla ends up... Are you talking about when Artilla kind of floats out of the Astra sub and goes over to... I believe it's the chemical ship. Is that what you're talking about? And he absorbs all the energy, all the.
No, man. Remember when they all get sucked?
I'm going to stop here and let you explain because I'm going to.
Hey, I might be absolutely confusing it, but I it was towards the end, and they had to get.
Oh, towards the end.
Okay. Yeah, they had to get off the thing, and I think it was Flipshot or Hydron. One of them was on one of the other ships. I think they like communicated with them saying, we're going to get you out of there. But they were going to blast into that, like the top of the ship. But if they did, the pressure would suck them out, obviously kill them. So they had to like put these things over their face. And
yes.
Okay, so when it gets blasted, they all get sucked out. I noticed something, and I might be wrong, but He-Man was the only one that didn't have one of those things over his face. So was that something written wrong? Or are they saying that He-Man could breathe in space, but the others couldn't? Did you catch that? Or was I maybe just absolutely wrong?
I would, you know, kind of one of those things where I would just buy that He-Man is holding his breath because he's He-Man. Probably the only person there that could do such a thing. But that's just trying to come up with logic that's not fully explained. You know, it's... You know, it's not the first time we've seen him in outer space where he clearly is breathing in space or becomes worried about, you know, not being able to breathe in space. So I'd say you can just kind of watch it for yourself and decide, you know, what do you want to believe?
Okay. Because you know? Yeah, I try to, like I said, I always just try to observe and just because I always try to, you know, put a little mental note in my head, a collection of He-Man's abilities throughout many different canons, you know, of what you could say, maybe what we're interpreting. Again, like I said,
it fluctuates, as some people have said before, you know, certain, why is He-Man struggling with this, you know, 6.5 foot tall, you know, beast, but then, you know, can pick up a very large vehicle or move a massive mountain, you know, it's just kind of based on what the writer happens to be writing. It's kind of one of those things where, you know, as a fan of a series, you know, you allow certain things to happen as long as you don't stray too far away from the main template that's been established for your characters, the story. And if you take it too far, that's when you got to call foul, you know, game over. You can't do that. But yeah, as long as you don't stray too far from what you establish as to be the,
the norm, maybe? I don't know.
What's that?
The norm? I don't know.
I mean, yeah, if we have He-Man, you know, I don't know. I don't feel like there's so many episodes where He-Man's, you know, strength gets him out of, you know, so many situations. But, you know, I think it's safe to say that for the most part, He-Man cannot breathe in space, no matter what the Christmas special says, and no matter what Attack on the Hive, you know, says. You know,
oh, that was Assault on the Hive. That was with the meteors. Don't you put that episode down in the meteor.
I'm not putting the episode down. I'm putting it on the fact that He-Man is talking in outer space, you know, you know, with no problem, just hanging out talking to a Comic Cat.
Exactly.
And no problem at all. And then, you know, running the laser bolt with She-Ra and Swift went in outer space as well. And no big deal. But in the episode two, Trouble, where He-Man's on the Horde rocket, and says, if this reaches the outer atmosphere, I won't be able to breathe. You know, you're taking the time to say He-Man can't breathe in space. He can probably hold his breath in outer space for a long period of time, but seriously cannot breathe in space. And that's what I get into. If fans want to believe that He-Man could very well breathe in space, they could say it for this episode, and they could say, sure, well, look at, you know, that's fine. You
I
know,
guess that's what's fun. I mean, they always have different little things that they're showing in the episodes, and you can just, hey, interpret it like you want. So, I mean, if some fans don't like it, they don't. If they do, there you go. I mean, either way, you show it's been done, and sometimes it's been done a way to where, yes, it contradicts what we just watched. But it was
it's one of those things, too, where, you know, like you said, it's if you want to kind of pick and choose, you know, what happens in your canon of Master of the Universe, even though I think a lot of fans have a general consensus of the transformation sequence, the secret identity of He-Man, Battle Cat, Cringer, and Prince Adam. the whole dynamic of, you know, secret identity, avoid away from his parents. Only a couple know about it. I think that's kind of like the main focus of the character that I think I'd say over 95% of He-Man fans can say, you know, they agree with. I know there's, you know, people out there who don't care for the secret identity and just want He-Man.
Oh, sure.
But for the most part, you know, if you walk to a person down the street who's close to your age and ask him about He-Man, ask him to name three things, you know, the transformation sequence is probably going to be one of those three things they mention.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, don't stray too far away from, you know, what we essentially come to expect.
Right. And we'll be touching, like you said, on pretty much something similar about fans can pick which kind of canon or interpretation of something. That'll be definitely about a character that we'll be highlighting, which will be the last topic we'll do. But as for this episode, it was a very fun episode. Like I said, you got to see a lot of the good guys, the bad guys. There was a lot of battles, a lot of action that was going on. And hell, even in one part of it, I think Flipshot looked like he was playing his version of Game Boy. I think he was even playing a Game
Boy.
Yes,
but it looked like he was playing like a Tiger Electronic game that he got at his local Kmart, you know, or something like that. Or some sort of cheap, you know, handheld video game version that maybe he got as a Christmas present from his aunt or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I liked it. It was a fun.
Like the one cool gift I got from my extended family.
Yeah, it was fun. Like I said, it makes you even wonder if somewhere in the future maybe there's disco in the future of He-Man, but I don't know.
No product placement there, people.
Exactly. Right here.
It's like not only we have product placement in our beloved cartoons, we do it on the podcast as well.
Right. So.
And then, I wonder, too, it's been like, you know, featuring, you know, an episode where they're taking the Dragon Walker, but don't mention it by name, but they show it, much like Joe is just showing his custom in the background. Not mentioning it, but do you know, people are like, that looks like one of his customs. I better get it to my local eBay account and purchase it.
Right, in a nice blurry format. But yeah, all right. So, well, that was a discussion.
But it's a good episode if you know. And I'm sure when we share what's in this episode, you'll have somebody, I hate new adventures. Just goes out of their way just to say, it's stupid. I hate new adventures. And well, more power to you if you must.
I
encourage all opinions, but I'm like, come on. Give me something legitimate other than I hate it. It's stupid. You know.
Hey.
Well, it wasn't as bad as She-Ra, but it's still pretty terrible.
What's that?
I said it wasn't as bad as She-Ra, but it's still pretty terrible.
Is that a caricature of another angry fan who's, you know, slamming She-Ra? But
no. I mean that's a nationwide consensus. We did a survey of 25,000 fans, and that's legit.
All right.
Are you chiming in with some made up information here that you found in a bathroom, you know, stall, or this was a real poll that you took, and the consensus was that it was better than She-Ra?
No. What I'm saying is that you know, right underneath the place where it had your phone number, that's where it was written on the stall.
Ah, there you go. It's bathroom stall talk. Gotcha.
Really? Well, he got me there.
Like you said, if there's somebody that maybe never seen this episode, I mean, they can always... You said you can watch them on YouTube, right, Tyler?
Yeah, all the New Adventures episodes are accessible on YouTube. I mean, just type in New Adventures of He-Man, Galactic Guardians, and the episode will pop right up. So if you don't want to dig through the DVDs, or you didn't buy it because you think it's stupid, or I hate it, or... Man, I just can't get behind it.
I think they can enjoy it. Like you said, I know,
but let's look, people. You've heard it before. The cartoon is a hard sell to a certain degree, yes, but it's the story and the mythology and the characters that I support 120%. It's He-Man and Skeletor leaving Eternia, meeting new villains to team up with and new heroes to team up with. And, you know, they're all original looking, you know, a cyborg with a big eyeball for a head. You've got, you know, a green skin, you know, character called Karate. You've got Spinwood, who's like Cyclone. You've got Tusk, a big guy with elephant tusks for weapons. And Artilla, who's like Roboto, but with an eye patch. You know, it's like, you know, I'm like, I don't understand why people are just so down on the cartoon because it is campy. There are some sour moments where you just want to groan and roll your eyes, but there are some great moments as well. No, it's nowhere near as good as Filmation. I would never even contemplate such a thought here. But what I'm saying is that there's so much more positive that I don't think people are just really taking the time. It's like, you know, look at these characters. I mean, look at them individually. Look at every single one of them and tell me what is wrong with Optic. What is wrong with Kaya? What is wrong with Vizar? What is wrong with Hydron? You know, I don't understand it. It's just one of those things where when people take the time to say, oh, and I can't see my hands, but I'm pretending like I'm an angry troll, you know, trolling. I think it's stupid. I just kind of feel like, give us legitimate reasons. The same people want to trash the He-Man movie just because Battle Cat and Orko aren't in it. I'm like, okay, I dismiss that because that's like the laziest response to a question. You know, yeah. It's just one of the things I get. I'm not saying people can't say it. If they want to say it, I'm not going to stop them. Sure as hell, I'm not going to ban them for being negative. You know, one thing I take great pride in what me, Joe, and Doug here do is that we don't want to censor people's opinions. You know, if Joe decides to call me a big fat duty head one time, he's more than entitled to do it. If Doug wants to sit there and say that he's seeing my phone number in every bathroom stall in America, he has that right to do that. And we are not going to censor him. If people want to send in an email or a voicemail and say, Tyler, I think you suck. And the fact that you support New Adventures of He-Man, I want you to walk off the nearest cliff. That gentleman is entitled to do so. And we're not going to go after him and ban him. You know, or whatever. We want to encourage that, you know what, if you don't like New Adventures, that's fine. If you don't like the live action movie, that's fine as well. What I'm saying is, can you give me a little bit more of a, if you're going to disagree, give me something with meat on the bone here. You know, don't just give me something you pulled out of a can, you know, that everyone else is saying here. You know, I want to hear some better reasons for people to dislike this stuff other than the same malarkey I've been hearing, you know, on the internet for years. It's stupid, blah, 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 blah. You know?
I'll tell you, like I said, as for me, because I didn't experience the cartoon, like I told you, until it came to DVD. And, I mean, I've said the story before, but again, like when I remember seeing the figures at the store and I'm expecting still to see Hero and Eldor and Giganosaur, Titus, Megator, you know, I remember I told you this many times, I thought they were coming. And then when I seen He-Man at the store, I just remember as just somebody who was used to the figures that we've always got, they didn't look like the figures I always got. I didn't want them. So then here came the cartoon, finally got to see it on DVD. And for me, yes, I had Filmation just washed and embedded into my brain. So when I seen this, I was like, whoa, wow, this sure is different looking. And like the feel and the atmosphere. And I told you, I fell asleep multiple times trying to get through the first four episodes. But then after I was like, you know, okay, dang it, I'm going to sit down. I'm really going to give this a chance. I sat and watched, and like I said, sure, campy moments, just like in Filmation or anything else, but had continuity, got more interesting, and yes, I started to appreciate it more, but I think what killed it really is, like you said, people are so used to one particular look that I would think, this is just my theory, not saying I'm right, but I think that hypothetically, if this cartoon would have been done in the same Filmation style, or style as Filmation, which, yes, we know that it couldn't be because Filmation went under, but hypothetically in a perfect world, if they decided, let's take He-Man into the future, and it looked like Filmation style, and also had atmospheric music, like how Filmation had, maybe, just maybe, people wouldn't have hated it as much. But this just went into a whole complete, I mean, it's a completely different animation studio. It's a whole different set of voices. And it was hard for people. But I'm telling you, if they would give it a chance, they'd see it really isn't as bad as they think or remember. Because it did take me multiple chances. I admit that. But then I started enjoying it. So I think if they'd watch it more, they could.
Well, when you first saw the toys, you know, you were expecting, you know, the continuation. Whereas I was just like, oh, new He-Man toys. And just bought it hook, line, and sinker. I'm like, am I the only kid that when those toys came out, I didn't question. I was like, gimme. I want it. I want He-Man. I got the He-Man Skeletor 2-pack. I mean, I want more of these. I want every character to see on the back of the card. Like, I cannot be the only young one when that toy line came out that just
immediately
gravitated towards it. I just felt like, because it, look, I'd like to think that if the idea really just didn't hold, I would have grown out of it. Like, I would have realized, you know what, that wasn't as good as I thought it would be, or these characters are not as cool as I envisioned in my head. But I still hold all the characters and the story. Like, I feel like, you know, if they were to go back and do another version of He-Man, Skeletor going, you know, to Primus, and battling out with the mutants and joining with the Galactic Guardians, and changing the tone, maybe eliminating some of the side characters and stuff like that, and just focus on the heroes and the villains, Master Sabrian, you know. You know, kind of cutting it down a little bit. You can span here and there and stuff like that. But I still feel like it's a good story that still can be told. And unfortunately, you know, the cartoon, you know, it's, I don't think it could bring in a lot of new people because of, you know, the very high campy aspects, especially if you're expecting, you know, the muscle bound Filmation style heroes and villains. These guys are all in shape, clearly, but they're not, you know, what you're kind of used to seeing. And,
you know, like I said,
but,
I don't think
but the whole people, but I've also heard this too, where people object to the whole space part. I'm like, for God's sakes, how many times did He-Man and Skeletor do things that were, you know, something space related? You get space pirates, the sticky fingers. You've got them going to, you know, the bright and the dark moon and the shadow of Skeletor, where Skeletor's trying to cause a war between two moons in outer space.
Yeah.
You know, not really. So there's just a couple of examples that putting He-Man and Skeletor in space is not far-fetched at all. It's not.
And like I said, I guarantee you weren't the only kid that loved it. See, like I said, we all have our different experiences that brought us to whatever reason we liked something or didn't. Like I told you, I sometimes wish I never seen that catalog in Elder Beerman's, because if I didn't see that, I would have never have been waiting for Eldor, Gigantosaur, Titus, Megator, you know, Hero, Eldor. I wouldn't have been waiting for them. So maybe...
Well, I was waiting for the next part of the Powers of Grayskull mini-comic, but I never did.
Sure! And I thought they were going to be coming with Eldor and Hero and all that, but what I mean is, I was waiting for them so much that when finally something popped up and it wasn't that, and I realized I wasn't getting them, that just flipped me out and freaked me out as a kid. I think if I didn't see that catalog, and maybe then I seen those He-Man figures, maybe then I would have said, you know what, hey, what the heck? I'll get them. It's a possibility. The other thing is, like, now I appreciate every one of their each and individual different sculpts and looks of those figures from back then, because they all are different. It's not like the same He-Man buck that was used for Masters of the Universe or every almost figure. And the thing is, sure, if they would have did those He-Man figures in the style of buck that we were used to, I think that would have had people gravitate more to get them, because they sure look like He-Man figures. But when they're all kind of smaller and weird and different sculpts, you're like, this don't look like He-Man. And as a kid,
but I thought those looked so good, because I just thought, you know, yes, they're slim build, but they're all muscular. They are full, you know, heavily articulated, more than most figures that size, certainly.
They were. Yeah, they were.
With the battle features. So I just felt like – that's why I couldn't understand them. I felt like I'd have been like the black sheep in a playground of He-Man fans as kids. I'm like, I'd be the odd man out, because I'm like, I picked the vintage line as number one, of course, but I'm like, there's nothing wrong with this new Avengers of He-Man toy line. The toys look great. It comes with cool looking mini comics. What's not to like about it? You know, obviously the Four Horsemen have done it justice by making every character that they've done so far fit right in there. See,
that's what I mean. Look how they all fit. You're right. Now it's the first time everything fits and looks, hey, they all look the same. I can accept it. And that's why, you know, it does. It makes you wonder, it should be a poll maybe we should put in a hypothetical, you know, world. Like back then, if New Adventures was done in the style of He-Man's buck, would, you know, the Master of the Universe, would you have liked it? It'd be a weird little poll, but wow, we sure side ran in that, but that was still fun.
But I'm fine with that, because I know we've discussed the controversial, you know, toy line / cartoon / you know, mythology of New Avengers, but it's interesting because so many people, you know, turn their nose up at it, you know. And you know, I'm not saying everything about that's been done about He-Man is perfect. You know, there are issues in everything from the Filmation series to New Avengers to MYP. You know, there's problems everywhere, things that could be done better, but there's also a lot of good in a lot of this stuff. And it's just trying to, if you don't like it, that's fine. No harm, no foul. But I just feel like everything deserves to stay in court. Like, I'm sure at some point we'll run into somebody else who's a diehard King Grayskull fan, and we'll just be chomping at the bit to come in like Perry Mason and Matlock combining together and forging the ultimate lawyer, you know, and putting King Grayskull on the stand and defending this man, you know, that's for right. all his, you know, what he's on trial with for, you know, ruining a perfectly good spot that should have been given to Hero.
Which that will be for another episode, but so, well,
are you planning on doing, like, when we do the inevitable Powers of Grayskull review, or are you just hoping to talk me into doing a King Grayskull?
Oh, we're gonna talk about it. Don't you worry. We're gonna bring it up. I'm gonna bring out the hatred. We'll bring out all the backgrounds behind this character and who loved and who hated him and the thoughts behind him. So yeah, we'll do that. But so that was that. Too mad, but we'll save our character for last. But right now, last week we did our hypothetical of like who we thought would be the best four evil warriors to possibly go into battle. Now we have another hypothetical, and I don't know if you want me to read this, but this is going to be about those that would be needed in a situation. And it can't be He-Man, but it's going to be four heroes. So we're going to bring something up on the screen, and it's basically a letter that Skeletor has sent to He-Man. And it says, He-Man, if you ever want to see King Randor again, you will need to test the value of your friends. Choose four of your heroic warriors to come to Snake Mountain and see if they can rescue your beloved king without your help. If you show up, Randor dies. So make sure you pick your best warriors. Yours untruly, Skeletor. So Tyler, last week I started with my four evil warriors. You start off. Situation, what's going to happen? Who's your four heroes that you're sending in to save King Randor?
My group is definitely
if you pick my four, I'm gonna freak out, but go ahead.
Well, I definitely, you know, I was thinking about first when I got my first show, I thought, if you're going to go into Snake Mountain, you want to go into Snake Mountain undetected. You want to be able to be aware of, you know, if is Clawful around this corner, you know, is Jitsu down the hallway here?
I know what you're gonna say.
The dungeon, is it Cobra Khan and Web Store? So I'd like to think that Clamp Champ.
I knew it. I was gonna say it. Do it.
With heightened senses, is somebody that you want to be able to detect is somebody walking down this hallway. If
yes,
he can smell Beastman if he's, you know, maybe 20 feet away taking a nap on the job.
And if he's being attacked, like you said, from behind, he's gonna catch an arrow like from ninja, or so. He's
a guy that can catch an arrow from a ninja is somebody I want on my team. Not to mention the guy looks strong as an ox, and to me, I'd rank him up there next to Fisto as co second place or strongest men on Eternia, right below He-Man.
Okay.
Also, I'd pick Cyclone for his radar detection of enemies, because I would have to have either Cyclone. I'm not sure which, because I thought about breaking these guys up into pairs of two, because I thought, you know, Cyclone would be great in combat, you know, in close quarters. If you got an army of hover robots and eight evil warriors coming at you, Cyclone can just spin and just take every single one of them out and be able to tell you in advance from the east side over here, we got four approaching evil warriors, and we got hover robots approaching from the south hallway over here, immediately telling you that. So that's extremely beneficial to be able, before they even get there, you know what's coming because he can detect it with his radar system.
And not only that, but like you said, the ability of just spinning, whether it's to create tornadoes to blast all the enemies away, or if somebody was to get a hold of him and he's holding them, and then he starts spinning to fling them anywhere. So Cyclone was my other pick. You just picked two of mine, but there's no way you're going to pick the other two. I know you won't pick the other two.
Okay. I have to have a man for aerial assault. Someone, okay. If, in case they get trapped in the mouth of Snake Mountain, if they have to jump, Buzz Off would be there to catch, you know, one of them, because I'm sure Cyclone could carry one of them, maybe two of them, but I'd like to think that Buzz Off would be there for a surprise jump, guarding outside, you know, if there's an issue. You've got a guy, you got your heroic spy in the sky, you know, a strong bee warrior for air attacks. and surprise rescues if you needed it.
Okay.
And then, of course, I cannot enter Snake Mountain without firepower. And my man with firepower is going to be Rio Blast.
Okay.
You know, I want a human arsenal walking in with Cyclone and Clamchamp and Buzz Off. Like I said, I don't know if I would split them up or not. But to have a guy that can, you know, whip out weapons from his wrist, his knees, his chest, and a big backpack, you know, arsenal to flip over his head, the guy could level tons and tons of Snake Mountain at once. I just feel like between Cyclone and Rio Blast, they could probably level half of Snake Mountain, given what they can do.
Right, right.
So, I'm like, well, none of the evil warriors other than Trapjaw are really good with firepower. I mean, for the most part, most of them are hand-to-hand combat or magical, you know, which magic is always a problem. But I feel like, you know, Trapjaw, I'm doing a quick run through of all the evil warriors here before I catch myself here. Saying something, you know, but I can't think of anybody off the top of my head in Snake Mountain that could match Rio Blast for firepower. I mean, you can have Cobracon Fire Mist / Venom, you know, / Sleeping Gas, you know, whatever, at him, or you know, Evelyn shooting projectiles, if you want to say MYP Triclops firing blast from his visor. But I feel like Rio Blast is going to be a hard person to match with, at least from a warrior-to-warrior standpoint. I mean, Trapjaw's got one arm, but I could come up with a variety of weapons to try and match up with Rio Blast, but Rio Blast has got entirely too many guns
built in. He's a living army, basically.
He's a living weapon. He's like Artilla and Roboto. He's just, you know, he's one big weapon. So those are my four champions of Eternia that are going to go in and rescue King Randor and level Snake Mountain.
Well, that was pretty cool, because just like last week when I said three and three were yours and you had the other fourth, well, you picked three that I was going to, because I was going to pick Clamchamp.
Really? You picked – okay. I thought maybe just two of them.
No, three, because I picked Clamchamp. Obviously, like you said, not only his senses, because like you said, he's going to be able to detect if anybody's going to track, you know, attack him from behind, but he's also a brute. He's strong. He has his weapon to hold people at times and to throw them, you know, back if he captures them. So Clamchamp, you have there. Cyclone, it was not only because of his radar, but I just kept picturing. I kept thinking, you know what? All right, fly. And I was like, Stratos? No. I'd like to, but no, I'm not picking Stratos. Then I was thinking of Bozoff, just like you, but I was like, I just want one person that's going to fly, and it's going to be Cyclone. And Cyclone not only has the radar, but he also can create tornadoes. He can also spin his body where he would grab people and spin them dizzy and, you know, fling them anywhere. So Cyclone is very dangerous. So he's your flyer, and he can do his attack in multiple ways. Then I just went blank. Okay, there was the third one that I picked. This one was one I was debating on. Now, Rio Blast, of course, I did pick Rio Blast also, because I figured if you're going to attack anybody from a distance, I mean, this guy is shooting everywhere, and he has this also the visor that comes down over his eyes so he can see and be a perfect marksman. So he can be shooting and knocking people off from a distance. And, of course, up close, he can be blasting. So that's why I had Rio Blast. But my fourth, I was debating between two people, and I was thinking, okay, do I want somebody that's going to come in and then can maybe cause, let's say an ice attack, a water attack, a fire attack, turning water and fire and making steam to making things where you can't see what's going on. I was really debating on Snoutspout, because Snoutspout, at least in the UK, I like how they further expanded upon his powers. He wasn't just about blowing water out of his nose. He could shoot beams of energy. I think he could shoot ice, and he could shoot fire out of his trunk. He was like, he was kind of a weapon of many things. So I was thinking of him.
I could buy him turning water into ice or something where he could, you know, change the temperature of the water that he projects out of his trunk.
Yeah, and he even had fire, because I pictured if he was shooting ice, then did fire, he could cause steam and it would blind the characters. They wouldn't be able to see. But I was like, now I just got to go with somebody that's going to be brute strength in case you do have to get in close, hand to hand, and somebody that is super strong. And that is the power of the Tower of Power. That's Extendar. I was like, I'm going to pick Extendar, because he is a very strong guy. He's like, obviously he can, you know, extend his body if he could get into higher situations. But I figured if it was muscle time and he was going to be taking on multiple people that would be on him, he would have no problem at all, I think, knocking Beastman off, Triclops off, whoever would be a couple people getting on him. So I wanted a brute, and that's why I'm going to pick Extendar. So those are my four, but the three you picked, I thought it was kind of spooky because it was three I was picking, but I figured, I figured the fourth, I was like, I don't think he's going to be going with Snout Spouter or Extendar, because those are the ones I was debating on, but I stuck with Extendar at the end.
Wow, boy, two weeks in a row, we end up picking the three of the four same hero warriors, man.
Because you're really thinking. I mean, you know, it's, don't get me wrong, it's not that you don't love the other characters that, you know,
can, well, no, it's favorite, like that, and I, that's the whole point of this exercise, and for people listening, we want to emphasize this is building strategy, not, you know, who you think is cool, or, you know, who, you know, it's strictly based on skills, who, you know, in a, you know, a battle of wits and strength and things like that, who can get the job done. Basically, you put these skills together, who is going to come out on top. And
right,
you know, obviously everybody's got their idea of what would work, but that's the whole point. Not just picking, you know, what would look cool together. If that were the case, I'd pick, you know, Moss Man, Cyclone, Clamp Champ, and Lizard Man, because right, those are my four favorites. And that's just because, but you know, as much as I love Lizard Man, trying to work in the strategy, yeah, I feel like I had to pull in Rio Blast and Buzz Off, because I'd like to have two guys who could fly. That way, you know, you can, one guy can carry Rio Blast, one guy can carry Clan Champ. You don't have to worry about running to escape, you know, or getting back down the mountain and running through all the fog and the dangerous grounds that surround Snake Mountain. I was like, no, just fly. Let's get the hell out of there immediately. So,
well, that's good strategy. But yeah, it was an exercise to make it think. So, well, we both picked our four, and we'll always think of other hypotheticals in the future. We'll think of something else.
Yeah, definitely plan on doing, you know, picking, you know, the best four hordesmen. I was about to say horsemen. The four best snake men, the four best members of the Great Rebellion.
Sure.
You know, as well as the New Mutants. Or, New Mutants, dear God, man, not the Marvel comic title, the Evil Mutants and the Galactic Guardians. I'm not going to call them Galactic Protectors here, because Marvel and Disney are not here to monitor what we're saying. So it's going to be Galactic Guardians here, people.
There you go.
Look forward to picking all, going through all these groups and hearing what people, and we got a lot of good responses for what people thought would work on last week's. You know, a lot of people picked Beastman. A lot of people wanted to utilize the idea that this guy can command hordes of creatures. So that was, and too bad for being a strategist, or using Evil Lind, or Triclops and Cobra Khan, and it was cool. A Ninjor was picked. So it was good to see people pick a variety of people and emphasize what they would be on that team. That was cool. So we hope to get a lot of good responses based on this one, and as well as further. I don't know what we could call this whole thing that we're doing here, and that when we go continue on, like, you know, like I said, I've never played the game Risk, so I don't know if what we could call, you know, this moment in the show where we assemble characters based on their skills and strategy and things like that.
Well, pretty much you said it right there. It could be like Master Strategy. I mean, you know, it's Master's Strategy.
Master Strategy. There you go. There it is.
There you go. It's been coined right now.
Yeah.
Live.
Marked it right here. We got it copyrighted.
There it is.
Network there.
That's right. So, well, that was good. We'll be back with more Master Strategy in upcoming episodes. But now we're going to get to a discussion that I wasn't part of on this episode a long time ago. It was a day I just was off for whatever reason. And this is a character that, well, how we're saying, depend on your canon, what you like. Maybe you like her as a clone. Maybe you like her as a warrior goddess. Maybe you like her as a young woman. Maybe you like her as a younger teenage girl. But we're talking about Teela. And she has many different origins, many different types of backgrounds. So, well, you have her as a warrior goddess. You have her, you know, how when you had the action figure, you know, everybody was probably confused at first. You're like, wait a second, in the mini comics, they're saying the goddess or sorceress, but then it's saying Teela, and then, you know, you take it off, it's Teela, you put it on, it's the sorceress. Like, you didn't know what was happening, but then you read the mini comics, and sometimes she's blonde, sometimes she's not blonde. Here comes the cartoon where obviously she's a redhead, and then, whew, the the DC Tex, I mean the Texera ones, if you will. I'm sorry, the Texera ones where she's a clone, and I don't find many people that are fan of that version. If they like it, good, but that one, you know why it was creepy to me, which I'm sure everybody knows, is Skeletor, you know, his plan was to clone the goddess slash sorceress, in which made Teela, and he was going to raise her until she was 20, or I don't know, raise her until he could marry her. I was like, well, this is perverted. You're going to raise this baby and then marry this baby raised? That has to be the goofiest and, to me, the strangest story or background for Teela. I mean, what did you think about that one? I mean, for me, that was a hard one to swallow.
It's not really considered incest because he's not family, but, you know.
Still bizarre. You know, like, you know.
Adopted father, you know, being Skeletor and raising this child, kind of like Hordak raising Adora. You know, but, and then to say you just want to marry, it just seems kind of, well, Skeletor, I had to figure, you know, if you want to marry somebody, wouldn't you rather marry somebody that's currently your own age? You want to wait 20 more years before you, just so you can, you know, think that you're going to obtain Grayskull by marrying this woman here? And it's, if I were, you know, the evil warriors, that say, you know what, we don't question you on a whole lot of stuff, but are you out of your mind? You know? That's what I say. You know what? I quit. I'm going to go work for the Horde, or I'm going to become, you know, a member of the Royal Guard, because I'm not working for a boss who wants to raise a baby that, and eventually marry it.
He's on Eternia's like, sex offender.
We're going to believe this guy's going to pay us on time this week? No way.
He's a registered sex offender on Eternia.
Yeah, he's going to be on to catch a predator. That's what you know, Chris Hansen. Like, take a seat right over there.
Yeah, sit down here.
You know, Skeletor's like, you know. I wasn't doing anything. He's like, what are you doing here? I was just going to bring her some baby toys, you know. Well, according to these messages you sent to your coworkers, you were going to marry this baby.
Exactly.
What are the people supposed to think about that there? And then the cameras all come out, and Skeletor's pulling his hood over his head. And, you know, He-Man and the heroic warriors are waiting outside the house, waiting to arrest Skeletor, you know. This is a great, great spoof on Robot Chicken.
It would. They should go work upon it.
They come out, they go over the top and trying to arrest Skeletor. And Skeletor's like, oh, my back. Please, please be easy with my back.
Exactly.
You know,
it's a
they tease him, and he starts crying.
Right. They catch video footage, like you said, of things that he was talking back and forth with a young 12-year-old Teela or whoever it might be on his, you know, saying his dumb.
Talking to this baby Teela or child Teela through the internet, you know. You know, young, when I plan to marry you someday. You're like, really? What does that mean? It means we're going to kiss and hug each other, you know? And then Chris Hansen's like, I've got the transcript to your Skeletor.
Yeah, but remember, his internet would be that on that boat, that table that's in his, you know, his
Yeah,
room.
He's talking to her through the view screen. And
yeah.
Oh, my gosh. The Skeletor's kind of like got his hands in his face, you know, like, I didn't say that. I just stopped by. You know, I was just going to come over and visit. I was going to bring her a pizza. You know, we were to go to the Eternia playground and play on the swing set. And, you know, oh, boy, this is...
Oh, Jesus, we signed
up. Yeah, there you go. What are you doing here? What are you doing here? Just a few more questions here. No, take a seat. Take a seat right over there.
Oh, Jesus, well...
Those shows are absolutely hilarious.
Oh, sure. Well, besides... That was really good.
I mean, we can do the whole roster of Evil Wars, like Beastman's caught going into this house to marry a baby Teela, you know? You know, Beastman's I'm just being stupid, I guess. You know?
Isn't that it?
Oh. Or Trap Jar, Jitsu comes in. Jitsu walks in with like this shocked look on his face. Huh, I was just going to the beach.
Stupid.
Well, you got Blade sits down, you know, with his bald head there, and he starts eating cookies. Oh, these are brownies. These are really good here, you know. And he looks at Chris. Is this some sort of trick or something here?
Oh, you're thinking of too many episodes. Well, let's get back to.
Imagine Stinkor coming in. He's like, "Sir, you want to explain yourself here? You come in here reeking like a skunk." And you were going to come in here and try to marry this young girl, smelling the way that you were? You want to explain yourself? Someone get this man a bath. But first, take a seat. Take a seat right over here.
She said she was a beautician. She was going to make me smell good. That's why I'm here. She was going to do my hair. She was going to clean me up.
She told me she was into, you know, men who didn't wear cologne and deodorant.
Oh, crap. Well, now that we're off of the...
Or Modulock, you know. You told me you were going to take these extra body parts and do what to her? I didn't say that. That was my other head.
Oh, my God.
Well, it was Multibot talking. That was a robot talking. It wasn't me. Oh, but we can have so much fun.
Oh, crap. Well, let's go back into the topic of other TLS.
I love that. It is so perfect that Doug threw in Chris Hansen.
Exactly. That worked perfect. But
that is awesome. Thank you, Doug.
Oh, shoot. Well, okay. Well, we know the Warrior Goddess version 2. You know, the really good fighter that we've seen in some of the mini comics. But what were your thoughts of her in Filmation, from when you first seen her to as the series went on? How did you like Teela in Filmation?
I'm gonna try and do, you know, be a little bit more, you know, because I've ranted and raved in our previous discussion with her. You know, I've mentioned several times, you know, Teela is a good character. She's a needed character. She's a must needed character. And not every episode she's written is a big pain in the ass, but there are a lot of them where she is written as that. And I can never, you know, figure out why, you know, and a lot of the, you know, action media, you know, like with the cartoons and to a certain extent the live action movie, where she's written as this hot tempered woman who sometimes can help save the day, but a lot of times has got that chip on her shoulder and just gets her in trouble. And He-Man's got to save her at the end of the day because she just didn't listen. She didn't think clearly. And I just have always felt that, you know, a character that's labeled as Captain of the Guard is someone who's competent, who's smart, skillful, you know, with strategy as well as, you know, hand-to-hand combat. It's not someone that thinks so haphazardly, you know, and, you know, is very quick to, you know, shoot first, ask questions later.
Yeah.
You know, and just looking for, you know, reasons to be a smartass, thinking that she's, you know, maybe to a certain degree above certain people, Adam in particular. But I just kind of feel like, you know, she's not like that in the Golden Book. She's not like that in the mini comics. She's not like that in a lot of the other medias. You know, I mean, most of the, like even the hardcover Golden Books, you know, when she's featured, she's not featured as a hard ass. And I could never figure out, you know, MYP depicts her even more, I think, in that series, as a very hot-headed and just stubborn and unlikable character, you know. And
she was written younger in MYP. Do you think that maybe made her?
Well, no, I still feel like He-Man, I mean, Adam and Teela were, you know, I'd like to think, and I think in Filmation they're about 20 years old, I think, you know. I think that's the...
To look at that as 20, 21, whatever. But yeah, MYP, I always thought they were like...
And probably in 16. MYP, they're in their late teens.
Yeah, I always looked at it, for me...
I think Adam is 16 when he gets the power sword in the beginning pilot.
Yeah, so I look at him as, 16 years old in MYP, and in Filmation, maybe, like you said, 21 years old. And, you know, in Filmation, you know, she's, like you said, she's Captain of the Guard, so you figure she's there to watch over Adam or try to, you know, protect him, and she is sent into a lot of situations where she's needed, but sometimes I felt like they would write her as she was younger, meaning, like, Man-at-Arms would be like, you know, Teela, do not do this, or, you know, watch over, you know, like, don't go there, don't do this, and then she would go right into battle, almost like defying.
Well, that's what I feel like, giving this character the label of the Royal Guard. I'm like, well, clearly this woman is capable of leading legions of troops into battle on her own. So for Man-at-Arms to then tell her, you know, you need to stay here, work on the lasso dispenser, or you need to stay here and just guard the palace, or just stay here. I'm like, well,
I know
from the story standpoint, this was a cartoon targeted towards boys. So the girl is going to be not necessarily, you know, on the same level as He-Man, but she's, you know, going to be strong-willed, but she's going to get in trouble so He-Man can come in and save the pretty woman. I get and understand that. But if we're looking at if going into like a new series or something like that, if you're going to give her, I wouldn't give her the title Captain of the Guard. I would give that as something that she hopes to one day achieve. And Man-at-Arms reminds her, look, Teela, you can't act like this and expect to be Captain of the Guard. You want to be Captain of the Guard, you got to think before you go into battle. You can't just run in and think that you're better than everybody else. It's just more skilled in hand-to-hand combat and sword combat than everybody else, because you know, I trained you and you think you deserve it and you're entitled to it when she isn't.
Hey, look at that. I mean, that's the other thing then. Or if they're going to make her captain of the guard, then she's captain of the guard. And she's a very capable person to where she doesn't have to always, you know, have men at arms telling her, don't do this, don't, like, talk to her like she's a little kid. I know that's his daughter, adopted daughter, whatever. But don't talk down to her like she doesn't have common sense. If you had the faith in her and she became captain of the guard, then she's confident. She's proud. She's a warrior. She can fight. That's why I love about, you know, her warrior goddess kind of like version earlier on, because she was capable. She was strong. Hell, she was taking barbells or dumbbells and tossing them to Prince Adam like they were apples in some of the early DC three-part miniseries or that Superman one, whatever. But that's what I mean. If she's going to be strong, let her be strong. But if she's going to be somebody that defies her father or goes into situations where she might always get in trouble, then don't call her captain of the guard. But me, I'd prefer she was captain of the guard or a warrior goddess, this strong woman that she's in there fighting and she's aiding just like all the other guys. You know, she can fight and she can hang in there. Don't be the damsel in distress, because you sure didn't get that feeling of her in the 87 movie. She didn't feel like a damsel in distress. She felt like a confident warrior that's, hey, she's fighting right with the guys.
Yeah, and a bit hot-headed, which is kind of what we expect of the Teela character. Someone who's very, you know, she was quick to jump at Gwildor, you know, a few times in the movie. And as a kid, I hated that, but not too far to where you felt like this. You know, as a kid, she bothered me because I felt like she was picking on Gwildor so much, and I'm like, oh, you're so mean to Gwildor. What the hell's your problem? But as an adult, I'm like, you know what? They wrote her very well. Where they write her very similar to what we expect, but she's not
whiny,
obnoxious,
right?
You know, she's at least in the book, she's very focused.
Yeah,
you know, she's not thinking haphazardly or acting without thinking. She's very, she has a goal and it's what she's going after in the movie. She's portrayed as a very competent character, you know, and loyal. And hungry to get the job done, and very, very, very likable. I mean, very attractive, of course. Chelsea Phillips, dear God, man, she fills out that outfit amazing.
Those are my two favorite, though, is like the 1987 movie Teela, and then the warrior goddess with the blonde hair from the early DC comics. Those are my two favorite Teelas, because they're Teelas that felt, like you said, whether one could be hot-headed, however it could be, but they feel like they can get the job done, and you feel like if they're in battle, they're there to really do something and not just going off, flying off the handle or being whiny or just, like you said, haphazard about what they're thinking. They're confident and they're getting stuff done, but they're not the damsel in distress. You know, they don't need to be. Teela doesn't need to be that. I don't like that she has to always be rescued here and there. Sure, like you said, for the cartoon, I guess it was needed. It made sense. It's a boys' cartoon, but I just go to always the DC early DC early comics. And then the movie. Those are my two favorite Teelas. I feel like they really got her done well. And if they're ever to do Teela again, I hope they expand upon something like that and leave the obnoxious stuff, leave the one that's always picking on Adam nonstop. We don't need that. They don't need that chemistry. I didn't like it. I've never liked that chemistry.
I don't like it at all, but I feel like the only way that would work is if in a new series that's not written by a moron, that you make that her character arc, that if you want to... If you are so determined that, you know, this is all I know about Teela, all I know is what people have said, and she's mean and fussy and griping, likes to bust Adam's balls, then fine. Make that her character arc for the first season. And by the end of the first season, her, you know, dumbass mentality gets her in a lot of trouble, where it either causes somebody to lose their life or causes the Royal Palace to get sacked by Skeletor and the Evil Wars because she wasn't thinking clearly or at all, and was just thinking, you know, I'm top dog, I'm captain of the guard, or I want to be captain of the guard. This is how I'm going to prove myself. Let it be something that, you know what, you can't do this anymore. Let someone lose a life. Let you know, the price for acting that way continuously will come back and bite her in the ass. Like, make that a legitimate reason for her to have redemption for acting this way. You know, I'm like, if you must use it, that's the best way to use it. By the end of the first season or the first, you know, but not to the point where you're writing her as like, oh, look, Mechanic is stupid. What kind of powers
does
he
have? Yeah, I don't want that.
No. I'm not talking about that idiocy. I'm talking about a character that holds herself in such high regard and thinks that she's better than Prince Adam in combat, and she thinks that she, you know, should be Captain of the Guard, or that she is Captain of the Guard, and holds herself at a much higher level than the other heroic warriors, simply because, well, she just feels like she's entitled to it, or she has a chip on her shoulder because she's not a man, and she wants to constantly keep proving it. I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff you could do with it, but make her likable by the end of it. And I don't mean by the entire run of the show or cartoon or, you know, the movie or, you know, the comic book series, whatever you're going to do, but make her realize that, you know what, I can't live life like this. I can't be Captain of the Guard for years and years and years and hold responsibility and think like it, like an, you know, an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like you could take this lemon and make lemonade out of it. You know, or just from the get-go, Ryder as a very strong-willed Captain of the Guard.
Right.
You know, and, you know, make her, you know, like the mentality of Ripley in the second half of Aliens, when she's pretty much taken over control and the Marines are listening to her as to, like, okay, what we should do here. She's not bossing people around, but she is in control because she's competent and smart and knows what to do. Which is something we don't see too much of Teela. We just see her as a loyal friend of He-Man and Adam, and goes into battle and fights with the boys. And that's fine too. But I'm just saying, if people really want to make her a likable character and a competent character, there it can be done.
Oh, of course it can be done. I mean, because the proven example is Force Captain Adora, if you will. Like Adora, sure, she was raised by the Horde, and like you said, under evil intentions, but that's a captain of something who's very strong, very confident. And then when she breaks out of the Horde, when she's with, you know, the rebels and the Great Rebellion, she's still strong. She's confident. That's what Teela.
I kind of feel like the Adora's Force Captain that was probably handed to her as opposed to earned.
Well, even if it was
handed. I kind of feel like Hordak was going to give that to her no matter what, which is why
they're
jealous of her.
No, but what I mean is, at least how it's written, you know, if she is a force captain or a captain of something, she's confident, she's strong, and you could say, yes, that could be somehow at first how it was from an evil side, strong and confident. But either way, she's not silly. She's not sitting there where she's picking on people all the time or whiny or obnoxious. She's a captain of something. And so that's what I felt like. I mean, like Teela, if she's to be a captain, have kind of that strength and, you know, of like how Adora did when I guess she was Forest Captain Adora. But still, even when she went to the Rebellion and she's there helping them, she's still a confident person, a confident woman, and a strong fighter. And that's what Teela, to me, has always should been. It's just a strong fighter, whether she's a captain of something or just that warrior goddess. One or the other. I like I said, I prefer the warrior goddess, the blonde one, but if she is any bit of a type of force captain or a captain of anything of a guard, if she's captain of the guard, like the movie. The 87 movie pretty much did it well. Those are the Teelas I like. I don't want the Filmation stuff, and I definitely don't ever want to see MYP stuff again. I do not want that too young, the bratty attitude. I don't want that. You need a woman. You don't need a girl. You need a woman.
Yeah, no, you know, of course, the 87 movie version is my favorite. I mean, there are some good moments. Teela has some good moments in Filmation that certainly outweigh anything in MYP. There's not a likable episode or moment in MYP because you just feel like, you know, it doesn't mean anything because you're going to go right back and do something, you know, bitchy in the next episode.
And it's like that carried over. You know, I feel like the MYP Teela attitude carried over, unfortunately, to all the type of comics that were coming out recently.
Because the people writing the books, that's all they knew was the 2000X cartoon. And they think that they're qualified to write the current He-Man because they watched the 2000X cartoon. I'm like, great. We're watching people who just
out of all canons
have a
to
vague
choose.
Recollection of Filmation and don't think it's that good because, well, NYP was my real He-Man here, so therefore I'm unqualified to write the latest edition of He-Man for DC Comics, you know? Is a lot of their pipe in their smoker's jacket.
Right, that's what I mean. It's just, out of all canons for Teela and backgrounds, they sure picked the worst. That's the one I would never have picked.
Because they hired the laziest writers who don't know anything about He-Man. And I'm just sick and tired of people being, you know, forced to accept, you know, if you want a He-Man comic, this is the kind of crap that you're just going to have to deal with. You know, I just feel like people deserve so much better, you know, not just with how, you know, think certain things, but just the entire canon of He-Man. It's God. You just, well, it's the same thing with most superheroes, too. You kind of feel like How hard is it to screw up Spider-Man? But, you know,
it happens.
You hear people all the time slamming Dan Slott for what he's doing with that, or, you know, what, you know, Brian Michael Bendis has done with so many of his books, or what, you know, I'm trying to think of a couple other.
No, I see what you mean, though. I mean, nothing can be perfect. There's always going to be something.
Well, nothing can be perfect, but you just kind of feel like, you know what, I don't feel like He-Man has to be something that's fitting the current template of superhero stories, where everything is a large arc, so you can guarantee selling multiple issues with different covers, because you got a big story going on, as opposed to one story that's wrapped up for the month of March, and then next month of the month of April.
I've said that a million times. That's what I prefer. I'd rather have, like I said, I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with story arcs. You can do that once in a while. Do a two,
yeah,
three
but
issue,
it's,
but
it's,
I like the. No, you're right. I like the just one shots. Meaning, okay, let's say there's a story arc you don't care for, and you're not looking forward to the next one or the next one. You're not going to buy them. But picture just, you know, you're going to get 9 one shots out of the year, and they're all different stories. Each month, you're like, oh God, I wonder what this next story is going to be about. Oh, what's this going to be? Because it's just, like I said, a beginning, middle, and done. It's fun. And you can remember that whole story just like you remembered all the comics back in the old days. But when you start getting story arcs that don't float your boat, you don't care, you're not going to buy them. But yeah, give us some fun one shots. That's what hopefully can come back again, is something like that.
I mean, you look at this book alone, he's got nothing but one shot stories.
And look how people love it.
You know, I mean, look how thick that is of one-shot stories here. You got the story arc from New Adventures. I'm not counting the ones, you know, written for classics.
But still, that is,
I'm talking about, you know, from the – even the She-Ra, I mean, the She-Ra, New Adventures, all this, Manny Faces, Triclops, Trapjaw, Clash of Arms, Secret Liquid.
They're all great.
All of them wrapped up in one simple story. And they've managed to touch our brains and, you know, and continue to – you resonate with us as fans, you know, to currently, right now. And I'm like,
yeah. And they can remember titles.
Why can't it work now?
Exactly. Like you said, you remember the title. You remember what happened in that issue. There you go. You start getting to these multiple things. Who can sit there and quote, hey, what happened in issue 7 of this part of the Eternity Wars on this part? And it's like, who cares? What was that title called? It's like, I don't care. I was bored. It's like, okay, I'm getting dragged out. When are we going to get to something interesting? It's like, I don't care. But I think the fun one-shot issues, those stuff, they might come back someday. And speaking of those, since we're done with all this, and we had a great discussion on Tila, Tyler, what do you have to close with, and do you have something interesting, speaking of maybe one-shots?
I have an update from Carson. We got another panel to share currently. He got some of it done, but not all of it. But it's a panel for just in case. It's Moss Man talking to King Randor in the throne room with Prince Adam, kind of hiding around the corner to listen to the conversation that's going on in the throne room. And, you know, of course, to find out what they're talking about, what Prince Adam's thinking. We'll all be, you know, found out in when the book is completed for the Leech, Master of Power Suction and Leech mini comic that me and Carson have been working on, and just trying to constantly let people know what's coming. He's working on it, and you know, more and more images. Well, we're not going to share everything, because we do want there to be, you know, surprises for people when they do look at it and read it. But we want to show you, you know, the directions that we're going in. There's a couple images from the book I hope to share at some point, to kind of tease the direction that we're going in with this. So. But, you know, like I said, when we get the full book done, I'm going to put together some fun little, you know, small trailers, you know, with some music attached to it to get people's interest peaked. And just whenever he sends me something, I'll bring it up on the show and let people know. And I'll also post it in the various Facebook pages, too, to get people aware that it's coming. And I thank you, Carson, for getting this done. And that it looks fantastic. And I can't wait to see, you know, how Leech is going to look. I mean, we saw it on the cover, but inside the comic, there's some great, great action sequences that are going on in it, and some surprise characters and things.
Everything that's been shown so far looks fantastic. Very clean, very good looking art. I mean, it feels very very 80s, if you will. It just gives you that nostalgic feel. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, he was trying, and with this too, he was specifically trying to combine, like, you know, he got King Randor's crown from the PowerPoint Dread book. Prince Adam's look is combined from the early mini comics as well. He's trying to go for a Bruce Timm style face, he said. So
a little mix, yeah, pretty cool mix.
And we do combine a few things, but not things that are kind of considered criminal. Like the attack track is featured in this, not the toy version. That's all I'll say.
Mm.
You know, but we tweak things a little bit here and there, but pretty much keep it as if this is a book that was released in the 80s, going by what was currently in the cartoon, what was available in the toy line, you know, and not really show something that probably had not been released yet. And that's kind of what I'd like to continue to keep doing, is if we do something for Clam Champ and Ninjor, use only what was available at that time, you know, and not really
sure.
You know, show, you know, the Kula Talks or something like that, you know, running.
Well, I must say I'm very disappointed that Mossman will not have his diaper in this, but well, I guess I can't get everything. But
I took out all the garbage in this mini comic. Anything and everything that was despised about that Leech mini comic is gone.
What a shame.
Leech will not be in an ocean, he'll be in a swamp, the way he should be. And he's gonna be a big Hulk sized character, not a big massive dragon sized creature that comes out of the ocean and just shows up on Etheria. You know?
No spooning? No spooning of who is it? Merman and Roboto or whoever it was that were like...
No, nothing like... No, they will not be, you know, hugging each other, nothing like that. Merman's not even in this. And that's another thing I don't mind spoiling, is that the Evil Warriors are not in this. This book is to focus on He-Man and the Evil Heroic Warriors meeting, you know, the Horde again, which even I think Carson had mentioned too, possibly retelling the Mantana book. And what I would want to do is to be a gradual process and link these particular books, like Mantana would be the first Horde book. Or maybe, well, the Grizzlor doesn't need to be retold. So you can maybe have Grizzlor or Mantana, then Grizzlor, then Leech, you know.
I see what you mean.
You know, kind of something like that.
Yeah, we don't want to
but spoil it all. Only retelling, you know, the ones that were not that good. And honestly, right. Most of the mini comics were very, very good. I can't see myself trying to do anything else. And just like we said before, telling stories that needed to be told, like Zodak,
right.
Jitsu getting a story to himself,
Faker
getting one, Clamp Champ and Ninjor getting a solo story. Just
be interesting.
Yeah. So we have. Thank you again, Carson. And as more updates come in, I'll be sharing with them on the podcast as well as on the various Facebook pages.
There you go. Yeah, we definitely don't want to spoil it all. So,
no.
All right. Well, as for me, I guess for wrapping it up, I'll always say go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe, He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
Pass is over, John. Time for something new and improved.
I don't know that. I don't know.
Demolition Man, Simon Phoenix.